You know, there is a very specific kind of nightmare that relies entirely on a sudden absolute loss of context.
Oh, like when you wake up in a hotel room and don't know where the bathroom
Yeah,
is?
exactly. You wake up, and for a split second, you just have no idea where you are.
Right.
But usually, you know, the room comes into focus, the alarm clock makes sense, and you remember, right, I'm in my bed.
The panic fades pretty quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today, you handed us this fascinating stack of sources, articles, analyses, and mainly our primary text, which is Donald Fairsmith's sci-fi short story, Abducted.
It is such a brilliant piece of writing.
It really is. And our mission for today's deep dive is to sift through this narrative to extract some, like, truly incredible insights about the fragility of human identity.
Yeah, it goes way beyond your standard sci-fi trope.
Way beyond, because it starts with a wake-up call that
Yeah.
completely shatters that comforting return to reality we were just talking
Or
about.
drops you right into the deep end.
Totally. So picture this. You come to face down on cold, muddy, leaf-strewn ground.
Ugh, the sensory details are so harsh right away.
Right? You open your eyes and you are staring, just inches away, eye to eye with a tiny, unblinking frog.
Just this weird, surreal little
Yeah,
detail.
and your head is throbbing with this unbearable pulse. You reach up, your hand is trembling, and you feel a tender bump on your skull that shoots sharp pain through your whole body.
It is an incredibly visceral opening image.
It really makes you feel the headache.
Absolutely. And what we are exploring today is how this story operates as a masterclass in psychological tension.
Because it's not just a survival story, right?
No, not at all. Rather than just walking through a standard thriller about running from monsters in the woods, we are going to look at how Fairsmith takes these deeply ingrained cultural tropes of alien abductions and fundamentally turns them inside out.
He totally flips the script.
He really does. He uses those tropes to ask what happens to our perception of reality when the very hardware of our consciousness is compromised.
I am so glad we are taking a thematic approach to this because the core premise is just mind-bending. It really sneaks up on you.
It does, because before it introduces any sci-fi elements at all, it establishes this deep, primal sense of vulnerability.
Grounding the terror in physical pain first.
Yeah, we move from the physical pain of the ravine, fall straight into the psychological horror of amnesia.
Which is terrifying in its own right.
Completely. So the narrator tries to brush off the muck, and he realizes he's wearing this sleek black watch with alien symbols.
A very jarring discovery.
Right. And then the true dread sets in. Empty pockets, no wallet, and absolutely zero memory of his own name or his location.
Just a total blank slate.
It is like that heart-stopping moment when you pat your pocket and your phone is missing.
Oh, the worst feeling.
Yeah, but instead of your phone, it's your entire identity and memory that's just gone.
And that is where the author really grounds the listener in human survival instincts.
Like trying to find a road or something.
Exactly. The narrator remembers the basic rule, you know, streams lead to rivers and rivers lead to civilization.
That makes total sense. Right. It is very relatable logic. And using that relatable human logic makes the impending extraterrestrial horror feel much more visceral.
Because you're fully identifying with him.
Precisely. You trust his thought process.
So, as he is trying to survive and follow this stream, his returning memories start introducing the alien threat.
Just little flashes at first.
Yeah, a flash of memory reveals a hovering circular craft with this unnatural silence. No helicopter rotors or anything.
Which immediately triggers those cultural alarm bells for
Oh,
us.
totally. And then he has this vivid flashback. He's lying on a cold metallic surface, and there are two blue-scaled humanoids with unfeeling black eyes. They put a helmet on him and then a blackout.
A classic abduction setup.
Right. And in the present, he gets cornered near a 30-foot cliff by three of these aliens.
The tension there is suffocating.
And the alien device on his wrist translates, saying, "You have injured yourself and damaged the Blexturki. You will return with us to our ship."
Such clinical language.
Okay, let's unpack this. The narrator literally thinks about UFO documentaries when trying to process the hovering craft. Is the author leaning into these cliches on purpose?
Oh, absolutely. Fairsmith is deploying them very strategically.
Really? So it's a trap for the reader.
Yes. These familiar tropes, like the cloaked ship in the clearing, the sterile metallic odors, the translation device, they build a false floor beneath the listener.
A false floor. I like that.
We completely trust the narrator's terror because it perfectly fits the alien abduction blueprint we inherently expect.
We've been trained by pop culture to know exactly what's happening.
Exactly. We see the metal table and the blue light, and we think, oh, I know where this goes.
Which brings us to the climax of the terror. because the physical chase through the woods ends, but the true psychological terror peaks inside the ship.
When he is finally captured.
Yeah, and this leads us directly to the story's shocking pivot. So inside the Blue Lit ship, the narrator sees another human.
Subject Gamma 7.
Right, Subject Gamma 7. And this guy is naked, paralyzed, and just utterly terrified.
A mirror of the narrator's own fear.
Exactly. Then the narrator is ordered to strip. He gets paralyzed by this device, and the alien says, "Beeskex, remain calm. I am going to remove your damaged Blexterky unit."
Just incredibly ominous.
Oh, it gets worse. The alien then brings a gleaming scalpel down toward the narrator's forehead without any anesthetic.
The ultimate medical nightmare.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The alien calls him Beeskex and talks about reprogramming a voxel. If I'm the narrator, I'm thinking, this is terrifying medical jargon right before I end up in a jar of formaldehyde. How does he not just die of fright right there?
That right there is the peak of the subjective reality.
Subjective because of his human perspective.
Precisely. The fear of vivisection without anesthesia is a universal human terror.
Just the thought of it makes me shudder.
Right, and it perfectly illustrates how fear completely distorts interpretation.
What do you mean?
Well, what is actually a highly advanced medical rescue mission looks exactly like a brutal execution to a panic mind.
Wait, a medical rescue mission?
Yes. Because the anticipated pain of the scalpel never comes.
Oh, right. The unzipping. This part is so wild.
It is the defining moment of the whole piece.
Yeah. Instead of cutting into his brain, there is no pain. Just a sensation like peeling off a tight, sweaty layer of clothing.
The physical release shatters the entire illusion.
The human biosuit is literally sliced open and removed. And a helmet is applied, and suddenly memories flood back.
An entirely different set of memories.
Yeah. Homeworld corridors, complex equations, the starship Vaskin, the narrator IS Beeskex.
A blue-scaled senior exobiologist of the Confederation of Worlds.
It blows my mind. He's not a human who got abducted. He's an alien who got stuck in a human disguise.
It radically shifts the perspective from human prey to alien predator, or at least alien observer.
It's like playing a VR game so immersive that when you take the headset off, you're genuinely disgusted to realize you're not the character anymore.
That is a fantastic analogy, and Firesmith provides some incredible sci-fi mechanics to explain how this happened.
Oh, right. Vaskis, the engineer on the ship, explains it, doesn't he?
He does. He details how a cascading power fluctuation in the ship's Vaskix core actually corrupted Beeskex's embedded voxel implant.
Okay, so a hardware glitch, basically.
Exactly. And that glitch overrode his true alien sensory inputs with the biosuit's human emulation protocols.
Human emulation protocol. So the suit was essentially forcing his brain to run a human software program.
Yes. His consciousness was restricted to processing reality using only the biological limitations and neurochemistry of a human being.
And then he fell in the ravine.
Right. The fall damaged the Blexterky module on his wrist, which severed his communications.
So he was locked out of his own system with no tech support.
And stuck inside a panicked human mind. This connects to a much larger philosophical theme in the story.
The fragility of self, right?
Absolutely. The idea that if your brain is fed the right signals, your entire reality and identity can be rewritten.
It is terrifying to think about. You are only who you are because of the inputs your brain is receiving right now.
Exactly. Beeskex didn't just think he was human. He empirically was human for that duration because his sensory inputs allowed for no other reality.
But knowing the truth and getting his true form back doesn't immediately fix everything for him, does it?
No, not at all. The hangover of humanity is severe.
Yeah, the psychological scars really remain.
It's not a simple reset switch.
Right, because Beeskex feels this immense relief and pride in his advanced species once he's back in his blue scales. But he also feels profound disgust and embarrassment at having felt human.
The physical revulsion is very strong there.
He looks down at the discarded flesh-toned suit on the table, and he describes it as a grotesquely inside-out insect husk.
Ugh, such a vivid, creepy description.
Yeah, it's like he is looking at the physical boundary of his own nightmare.
And that lived terror drastically changes his behavior.
Right, because he immediately orders the release of the actual human, Gamma 7.
The guy paralyzed on the other table.
Yeah, they let him go, and Gamma 7 frantically gets dressed and flees out of the ship into the dark woods.
Pure flight instinct.
So what does this all mean for Beeskex going forward? He's back in his shiny blue scales, but he's fundamentally changed by this, right?
Exactly. He's profoundly changed, and that is the brilliance of the story's conclusion.
Because of the decision he makes at the end.
Right. Besbex decides to quit field work entirely and take a safe job as a curator at the Exobiology Museum.
A quiet desk job surrounded by dead artifacts.
Why does an elite scientist do that? Because the text says a visceral ghost of human terror clings to his consciousness.
A visceral ghost. I love that phrasing.
It means he accidentally experienced radical empathy.
Radical empathy because he was forced to feel what his subjects feel.
Yes. By being trapped in the subjective reality of what he considered a lesser species, the alien realizes the sheer horror of his own scientific methods.
He can't unfeel the panic that he routinely forced those humans to endure.
It breaks his entire worldview. The observer literally became the observed.
That is just incredible. It really takes you on a wild ride.
It certainly does.
From starting as this amnesiac in a muddy ravine to ending up inside the mind of a traumatized alien scientist.
It's a brilliant arc.
It is. And for you listening, it really reminds you how quickly your unquestioned reality can be completely overwritten by what your brain simply believes to be true.
It leaves us with a very unsettling final thought, actually.
Oh, wow. Lay it on us.
Well, Breskix's biosuit perfectly emulated the terrifying limited experience of being human.
Right.
The technology completely erased an advanced alien mind in the process.
Yeah.
So if technology can make an alien perfectly believe it is a terrified human, how do you know your human experience right now isn't just an emulation protocol running inside a very different kind of mind?